7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody. Dr. Tom Iannelli here with you for another Croc podcast. The Croc podcast, a very safe place for you to be. It is a place for our survivors to find inspiration, hope, and a place for sharing. On my screen, Angel Santana, Have Faith, Let It Begin. Angel, how are you?
I am good. I am at home babysitting, and you are hearing the small introduction to the our other co-host this week, my son Noah, who's doing much better. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic. It's been a very tough couple of weeks here on the Croc podcast with a lot of sad stuff, and everyone would have listened last week to our suicide episode with our friend Tara McGuire. And this week we're going to be talking about something happy but something sad simultaneously. We'll be celebrating a life of a woman that you met.
Absolutely. And it's funny you say that, because I was looking at the archives today, and I can't believe that what we're going to be talking about is the celebration that we did called Winnie the Pooh and Tiger 2. And that's
Tigger.
I said Tiger. I apologize. And that aired on May 16, 2021. Hard to believe that that was our 13th episode. And here we are coming in, you know, in 2022 at number 86.
To clarify for our survivors who are listening today, and maybe people who may be out of the area. So the Croc movement started as a social movement, a place where people could meet with cancer and interact with each other and gain a lot of support and juice and be able to help assuage their sadness and assuage their fear by talking to other survivors. And it morphed into a kind of a big thing here in the Hudson Valley. We had weekly, at least monthly meetings, and we had dinners, and we had educational series. And one of the greatest, biggest parts were to develop this community. And this community was started by a group of wonderful people. And as now the decades are ticking by, we're losing some of our amazing founding members of that movement. And Gloria Taylor, who we'll be talking about today, was the mother of Stevie Taylor. So when I walk into a room and meet a patient for the first time, they notice several things that are a bit unusual, if not off-putting. One of the things is the way I dress, which we talk about all the time, about wearing a jersey and being very informal and wearing a pair of sneakers. And the second thing they notice is I have a tattoo on my right forearm of a Tigger. And Tigger is a symbol of Stevie Taylor. So Stevie Taylor was our young pediatric cancer survivor who had a host of issues from his treatments and ended up really elevating all of us and really changing all of our lives with his inspiration, the way he lived life, the way he looked at life and prioritized the things that were important, and very much was not distracted by the things that were not important. So for that gift, I put his symbol on my arm. And I think a lot of people look at that and don't really know what to make of it. And then when I tell them the story of Stevie, they sort of understand. But Gloria represented something that was really amazing, in the sense that having a child who was sick, having a child who was on death's door for years and years and years and years, you know, getting sick, getting better, getting sick, getting better. It takes a very special person to be able to do that role and not fall apart, and not only do that role, do it well, and do it to such a degree that she elevated all of us, and she made us all better, as did Stevie. And actually, going back to my eulogy of Stevie, I did mention that, and I just to quote myself, and if you were his mother, he forced you to do the unthinkable, the unimaginable, to watch your child suffer over and over again. No mother should have to face such agony. Yet you not only gloried in the good days and in Stevie's wonderful qualities, you endured the hard days, the bad moods, the temper tantrums, and the stubborn moments. Indeed, you are the rock that absorbed the full fury of Stevie's frustrations. Gloria, you are not just great, you are the greatest. Woman, you are holy and sacred, and it is our obligation as the community that Stevie built to watch over you and do our best to help you survive this bitter loss. And I said that at Stevie's passing, again, many, many years ago. And I believe that her friends, the survivors, the Croc group, always surrounded her with love and with support and helped her as much as we possibly could and held up our end of the bargain, and she held up her end of the bargain. When she was diagnosed with cancer, we were all surrounding her with the best care we can give her. And it is no surprise, Angel, and you wouldn't be surprised to know that she fought her cancer as bravely, as selflessly, and without any complaint as anybody I've ever met. So what we're going to do today, Angel, is we're going to replay that episode of Gloria co-hosting the episode that was honoring her son, Stevie. But at the same time, we also honor her.
Absolutely. And again, as I stated in the beginning of the show, you know, this is a part of our archives. You know, some people would actually specify that, you know, it's a rewind. I don't think this is a rewind episode. I think a lot of our episodes are not rewinds. They're because every time you listen to it, you will learn something new. So I encourage everyone to sit back, enjoy this an amazing episode. You know, if you want me to have the last word, I'll put it through.
Do that, my friend.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Croc Podcast, and this is episode number 13. And I hope you enjoy it. I hope you take back and relax as Dr. Ian Ellie and myself, we take a deep dive into the short but impactful life of Stevie Taylor, a childhood brain cancer survivor whose vast post-treatment issues were dwarfed by his zest for life and spirit. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Croc Podcast.
It's Wednesday afternoon, Croc Nation, and you know what that means. It's another Croc Podcast. Angel Santana across the glass. Angel, my friend, how are you?
Oh, my goodness. I'm excited for today's episode since you just surprised me prior to being on the air. So for that, I'm speechless, but how are you?
We're doing great here. I have a very special guest. I want everybody to fasten their seatbelts. This is going to be one heck of a podcast. I want you guys to get a big box of tissues because you're going to be doing a lot of laughing and you're going to be doing a lot of crying, and it's all going to be good. And you guys are going to meet a very, very special person today. And we're going to start with a story. Don't I start with a story every week?
Yeah, that's what makes our show so unique. Come on now.
There you go. So, Angel, just for the sake of our listeners, I want you to pretend that you're waiting to see me. Doesn't have to be for cancer, for anything. Erectile dysfunction, dyspepsia, whatever it is that you want to see me for. he's smiling across the way. So, Angel, you're waiting to see this doctor, this world famous Dr. Ianelli. You've heard so much about him, and I walk in the door. I want you to tell me a couple of things about what you see. What sets me apart?
I would have to say the first thing that would, because I can use this for my own example when I first met you, the fact that you're wearing a jersey, which was great because you're a Mets fan, and so am I. You are not like any other doctor. You don't have the white coat. You don't have the stiff posture, but you're smiling. And you're very welcoming.
What else about me physically do you notice if you were to be very sort of critical, not necessarily utilizing the word critical, but if you were to really look at me, what else do you see that's different that you won't see on another doctor usually?
I'm going to say tattoos.
Well, there's one tattoo in particular.
The Tigger.
Yes. That's exactly what I was looking for. So when you walk into my office, you see the crazy guy, you see the sports jersey, the different sort of what would you say, disposition to try to welcome you. We just had an episode about what is your essence. I'm going to ask you questions that no doctor ever asks you. And eventually you'll look at my rainbow colored glasses, and that's all different and cool. And then all of a sudden your eyes will start shifting, and you'll look at my right forearm, and you'll see right in the middle of my right forearm, right on the meaty part of that forearm, you'll see a Tigger tattoo. And I think that what you would say, what I would say if I was the patient, is what the heck? Why would this guy who's a doctor get a Tigger tattoo? Why wouldn't he get a Tigger tattoo on his butt or on his leg or somewhere up on his upper back where I don't have to look at this tattoo? What is this guy, a motorcycle gang guy? Or, you know, why does he have Tigger? Like, why does he have a cartoon character on his arm? Well, the answer is today's episode. Today's episode is about a hero. A hero that was so important to me, a hero that was so motivating to me, so inspiring to me, that I actually got this tattoo in his honor. And we are here today, sadly, not with Stevie, and we're going to talk about that, but we're here with Stevie's mother, Gloria Taylor. And Gloria and I are going to celebrate the life of Stephen Taylor today. Gloria, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Yes, although also Angel and Croc Nation, Gloria is, in addition to being the mother of one of the greatest cancer survivors and inspiring young men I've ever met, but she is also a cancer survivor herself. So she really, she knows, she gets it, if mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying.
Definitely, I get it.
Stevie Taylor was born on February 10th, 1972. When I spoke to Gloria yesterday in preparation of this podcast, I asked her some specific questions, some very hard questions about Stevie's diagnosis and about basically how he was, you know, how he presented in, you know, those first 24 hours, the first couple of weeks, the first couple of years after treatment. And Gloria remembered every day. Gloria remembered it was like yesterday. The day that the other shoe dropped, the day that the guillotine came down, was on December 7th, 1976, when out of the blue, you mentioned Stevie came in with his eyes crossed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Stevie's eyes were crossed. A mother's love. She obviously knew that there was something was wrong. Got her to the doctor, got her to the neurologist, and the neurologist had admitted him to the hospital with the thought of transferring him to Mount Sinai. Now, this is 1976. This is not today. This is not helicopters and the whole thing. And Stevie took a turn for the worse that night on December 7th, and they didn't think he was going to make it. And believe it or not, I actually knew the neurologist who passed away a few years ago. He was so worried about Stevie, he actually got in the ambulance himself with Stevie and transferred him personally to Mount Sinai because he just didn't think he was going to he was going to make it. Stevie was in a coma. He got there, and thank God he got to Mount Sinai in time, where he got just exceptional care from world-class pediatric oncologists and pediatric neurosurgeons to fix the brain tumor that Stevie had, which was called the medulloblastoma. So today we're going to be talking about, of course, celebrating the life of my inspiration, of my hero, Stevie Taylor, talking to his mom, Gloria. But more importantly, we're also going to be honoring the pioneers of cancer survivorship, and that's the pediatric cancer survivors. Pediatric cancer survivors really were our lab, our workbench. Everything that we learned or know about adult tumors, we learned from pediatric tumors. Everything we know about survivorship came from these poor kids that we literally experimented on, Stevie being one of them. And every single one of these early cancer patients from the 70s, Stevie being one of them, usually did not die from their cancer. Stephen didn't die of his cancer. Stephen died of the treatments and the complications related to his cancer, But this is not going to be, this episode is not going to be about sadness. It's going to be about happiness. And today's episode is going to be honoring those pediatric heroes, those pioneers, those pathfinders, the people who blazed the trail for us, for we oncologists, who learn that less is more, that doing less on patients, we can still cure them without giving them these long-term side effects. And Gloria is going to tell you about all the things that they did to Stevie, all the things they did to save him, and then all of the price that he had to pay for his entire life. So Gloria, I'm going to turn over the microphone to you. Now we have him at Mount Sinai. We talked about that diagnosis. And now let's talk about his surgery, his radiation, and his chemotherapy.
He had, that night they had to put a shunt in to drain the fluid from his brain. And 10 days later, they operated for the tumor. Had 100% removal, but it turned out to be malignant. And then after that, he got meningitis and was in the hospital for 3 months straight. And then he started his radiation treatments at Mount Sinai daily. And then he started his chemotherapy for 3 years, 14 days on and 14 days off. So he was on chemo for three, you know, it was almost 4 years by the time he finished.
And we're talking about, how old was he?
He was five. It happened like 2 months before his fifth birthday that he had all the trouble.
Tell him where tell Angel and Croc Nation where Stevie's head would be after his chemotherapy for 2 weeks.
Oh my God, in the garbage can. He would lay on the couch and I would have to have a garbage can by the couch and he would throw up in that garbage can. He went to Monroe for his first treatment and the doctor told me to bring a garbage can with me, because he would probably have to throw up on the way home. And 10 minutes after we left the doctor's, I was pulling over and he was throwing up from the medicine that he got.
He got radiation to his entire brain and to his spine.
Right.
And he had chemotherapy, Angel, for 3 years. I asked Gloria yesterday, why 3 years? And this is what she told me.
They had just started treating brain tumor patients with chemotherapy. So he was one of the test patients, so to speak. I never thought of it that he was being experimented on, you know, but they didn't know when to stop.
And they just, there was nothing to go by. The patients that we treat now, Angel, for medulloblastoma, these young kids, these courageous young kids, they get treatment because of patients like Stevie, because of people who were treated at the initiation about these patients that were treated before we really knew about all the clinical trials and the data. And I'm sad to say, but again, this is not going to be a down podcast. It's going to be an inspiring podcast. The reason why we're spending a few minutes is just setting the table for what Stevie became, because Stevie was able to overcome not only what we were just talking about. Imagine being a five-year-old kid and having to go in and have your brain cut open, have surgery, then have your entire brain and spine irradiated, and then get chemotherapy for 3 years, when basically you get your chemotherapy and for 2 weeks you're throwing up, because the medications we use nowadays for chemotherapy were not available in those days. Imagine the strength of a mother having to watch their child go through all this and then have a post-surgical complication like meningitis, where he is in the hospital for 3 months and then having a three-year-old daughter at home trying to mother her. Can you even fathom even one bit of that?
I'm sitting here just taking it in. Not at all.
Now I'm going to make it even worse. Before I make it better, I'm going to make it worse. All the treatments that Stevie had basically put him basically in a bottle, put him in a vacuum. Steven stopped growing. He stopped developing. He needed to take basically a garbage truck full of medication every day because of all of his brain hormones that were not basically, you know, being generated by a normal brain. The spine basically never grew because of the radiation. His mental capacity, as far as, you know, we use different terms for intelligence, but as far as doing differential equations and thinking about going to college, that's all out the window. Steven is basically now a 10-year-old kid, then a 12-year-old kid, then a 15-year-old kid, then a 20-year-old kid, then a 30-year-old kid, but really living as if he was 8 years old for his entire life. And Steven weighed, how much did you say he weighed?
39 pounds at 8 years old.
He weighed 39 pounds when he was 8 years old. Angel, I think you and I weighed 39 pounds at birth, I think.
That's putting it lightly, no pun intended.
So now, Croc Nation, now that I have you crying and you guys are bawling your eyes out, which you should be, especially if you're a parent, now we're going to turn the tables and see what this little son of a gun did despite all of this hardship, despite all of this disability. So I look back on my notes, and Stevie meant so much to me. And I'm going to tell you why, and Gloria's going to tell you why. Because of the fact that despite all of these things, he was the most inspiring, the most vigorous, the most life-loving son of a gun you ever laid eyes on. And the way I met him was through Croc. I met him through Citizens Reunited to Overcome Cancer. Gloria, do you remember how he got to me?
Yeah, through Doris Busen.
So Doris was one of the therapists I work with. Gloria's friends with Doris. And she had recommended that, you know, Gloria come meet us, come to one of the meetings. And that's how we met Stevie. And I'll tell you what a spirit he had. Did he not?
He did. He could wrap you right around his little finger without you even knowing it. And that's what he did to Dr. Ian Ellis.
He right, yeah, he manipulated the crap out of me. But I have some really great stories to tell you. Besides the tattoo story, there's so many great stories, and we're going to go through each one of them. But going through my notes, I did come across his eulogy that I wrote. I was very, very honored to have been able to give his eulogy. And I'm going to start with some of the things that I said. So basically, I started by saying that I used the quote, and Angel, you would understand this. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slang it and smote the Philistine in the forehead. And he fell upon his face to the earth, because Stevie Taylor was David. He was the underdog. He was the young, the disfigured kid that nobody really paid much attention to until he opened his mouth and he filled the room, not with his voice, but with his spirit. And there's a lot of things Stevie did. And I'm going to get through what he meant to me. And then I want Gloria to comment on each of these and if she agrees with me. So the first thing that I wrote, besides him being David, the modern day David, and how he was the underdog, I wrote that Stevie was our yardstick, our quantifier, our teacher, for he put into perspective exactly what is important and what is not important. A broken car, a burnt roast, the kids need braces, who cares? He forced us to redefine our idea of a problem and at the same time confront our own fears, frailties, and insecurities. Gloria, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He was just, I don't know how to describe him. I mean, everybody loved him. And my biggest fear was when he died that people were going to forget him. But they never did. And they still haven't.
We will never forget Stevie. Hell, I put this freaking tiger on my arm just so I would never forget him.
Dr. Ian Ellie took him for the tattoo, and I said, a little one. And then when he came back after getting the tattoo, it was from his shoulder down to his elbow.
Well, there's more to the story than that. Let me just tell you. So since we have that, you know, we have the tattoo story on the board, let's talk a little bit about it. So I don't know about you guys, but if you opened your eyes, you would notice that tattoos are no longer restricted to prisoners and motorcycle gang members. So tattoos are everywhere. And for some reason, you know, many of my cancer survivors get inked after they're done with their fight with cancer. They get their survivor ribbon. They get, you know, whatever they will, you know, whatever inspiring verse or a flower that they love or something to sort of memorialize their struggle, their fight with cancer. And during PROC, again, one of the things we did was try to uplift everyone and try to let everyone express themselves in their survivorship. So we had an ink night. Now, Stevie and I used to kind of kid around with Gloria because, as you could think, even though Stevie was in his 20s at the time, you know, he was like a little kid. I mean, he acted like he was all that in a bag of chips, but he was just a little kid, sometimes a real PIA, if you know what I mean. And, you know, he could be a real piece of work. But I used to kid around when Gloria became overprotective. I said, Gloria, I'm taking Stevie out. We're going to go to a bar. I'm going to get him drunk. Then I'm going to get him tattooed. And then I'm going to take him to an Asian massage parlor and get him taken care of. And Gloria would come and punch me and hit me and kick me and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, I never did that. However, when it came to ink night, I said, Stevie, I'm taking you for your tattoo. You have had a year to think about what tattoo you want. So I said, Stevie, which tattoo do you want? And he said, I want Tigger. And I said, Tigger, you mean from Winnie the Pooh? And he said, yes, I want Tigger. And I said, well, look at all these great tattoos. You can get a skull with a snake going through the eye. You can get a dagger going through a heart. You can get an anchor. You can get something like for mom. And you want to get Tigger. I said, why would you on earth want to get Tigger? And he said, I want Tigger because Tigger kept falling down, but he always got up. And that's why he got Tigger. And when Stevie died, in his honor, I got Tigger too. But I got Tigger in a very visible place. So every day, if I ever got to a point where I was feeling sorry for myself, or if I was too tired, or if I was just in a bad place mentally, I could look at that tattoo and remind myself of what really living life is all about, what life should be, the way Stevie lived his life, what, despite all of his shortcomings, despite all of his problems and issues and medical issues, his medical pain, he got up every day to play. You know what I'm saying, Angel? He got up every day to play the game, and he played it hard, and he played like a champion every single day. And what I wrote over here is a nice segue. If we had paid attention, Stevie would have taught us that a person's life is not judged by the number of years they lived, but how they lived their number of years. After all, Stevie did not live life by the tick of a clock or the pages of a paper calendar. He lived each moment with passion, with exuberance, with joy and wonder, with expectation and hope. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's really a good way of really trying to bottle his energy. Is that's exactly right. The way I figure it is, if each human year is 7 dog years, then a Stevie year had to be good for at least 10 years. Stevie lived not one lifetime, but many. And I think that's really true. Despite him leaving us at age 35.
Right. Just a couple days before his birthday.
He really lived so much more. He lived many, many lifetimes.
He did more than I ever did in my life, and I'm doing now. You know, he would never get up and take an afternoon nap. Me, I have 5 treatments a week and I'm taking afternoon naps, you know, so.
Unbelievable. But I think that, Gloria, tell me if you're wrong, if you agree with me. Stevie's greatest gift, in my opinion, was his ability to be a builder of community. And he did this quietly, almost stealthily. All the time we thought we were building a community to help him and support him, he was building a community to support us. It was not we who carried Stevie on our shoulders, but Stevie who carried us. He did this by obliterating the walls of isolation that are so pervasive in today's society, a society in which many of us do not know who our neighbors are. Stevie was a community builder because he transcended community. He transcended neighborhoods. He transcended family. The firemen knew the cancer survivors. The cancer survivors knew the camp counselors. The camp counselors knew the doctors who knew the nurses. And the doctors and nurses knew the family. And we all knew each other because of Stevie. Those of you who were once strangers are now neighbors. Those of you who were once neighbors are now friends. Those of you who were once friends are now family. Stevie's family. And I think that's really what he did.
Mm-hmm. He did. And he would introduce me to people and I would say, well, what's their last name? You don't need to know their last name. It's just, you know, you just need to know the person, you know.
And that's what Stevie was. It was very simple, Angel. Stevie elevated us. He made us all better. He challenged us. He demanded us to not just be good, but to be great. If you were his doctor, his nurse, his healthcare provider, he forced you to think outside of the box when making judgments and decisions in situations you had never been in before. He took you to a land where books and journals and lectures and experience no longer applied. He reminded you how to practice not just the science of medicine, but the art of medicine in its most basic, primal, and human form in order to give Stevie's frail and failing body one more chance at the life he cherished. If you were his friend, his neighbor, his family, he forced you to walk the walk, not talk the talk. The phone calls in the middle of the night, the fitful sleep in the hospital chairs, the countless meals, the endless miles, the tears you dried, the laughter and joy you shared. If you were his sister, Dana, you were forced to be selfless, to be understanding, to be strong, and to put your needs second. And the most important person that I know is Stevie's mother, Gloria. He forced you to do the unthinkable, the unimaginable, to watch your child suffer over and over again. No mother should have to face such agony. Yet you not only gloried in the good days and in Stevie's wonderful qualities, you endured the hard days, the bad moods, the temper tantrums. An Angel, this kid could have a temper tantrum, the stubborn moments. And you were the rock, Gloria. You were the rock that absorbed the full fury of Stephen's frustrations. You are not just great. You are the greatest. You are the greatest. What do you think, Angel?
I mean, you know, just listening to the entire story, first and foremost, you know, thank you, Gloria, for introducing, you know, the world to Stevie. As a first-time dad, I don't even want to get into the whole discussion of what that must feel like. But I know that, you know, when you had stated earlier that now, you know, you're going through your treatments, the power that our children provide us is unbreakable. It is unfathomable. It is unbelievable the amount of energy that we get from our children. Stevie will live on through you, will continue to give you the strength that you need. And now, you know, where you were needed at the core moments of his struggles and the core moments of what he had to endure, he's now returning that energy and that ability to, so that you're not going through it alone. And I feel that today's message only ensures other parents whether they're dealing with hard times, whether they're dealing with issues, that a parent's job is to be there through the worst of the worst, the best of the best. But when we get older, it's those children that will always find a way to empower us. And just because he is no longer with us here today, it doesn't mean he has left. He just inside of you, and he's a living mechanism and a vessel and a power source for you. And for that, I'm honored to have known who he was, and I'm honored that we're celebrating his life today.
Thank you.
Stevie really went as far as he possibly could go. His doctors probably didn't think he would live to 12. He lived to 35. The last couple of years were very difficult. His body, which was already compromised, began to give out. His kidneys gave out. He was on dialysis. He ended up with a bowel perforation, and he finally left us on
February 7th, 2007.
I wrote that he was tired and he needed to rest. His gargantuan spirit burst through the confines of the wrinkled cocoon, a colorful, majestic, radiant butterfly exploding from the shackles of its lackluster shell, and at last free to do the things he could not do in life. Run like the wind, roar like a lion, climb the mountains of eternity, swim the seas of righteousness, no longer bald and hunched, deaf and lame, but with cotton candy wings and chocolate chip eyes, a Paul Bunyan chest, and a lollipop smile. And that is the Stevie that I have in my mind. That is the Stevie that will always be with me.
And he wasn't an angel.
Yeah.
All the time.
He was an angel, Gloria. He was just a real son of a gun angel is what he was.
No, he was. I took most of the brunt. He showed everybody the good, you know. And then as his sister got older, she defended him, you know, and protected him. And, you know, so, but, and she was only three she only went to see him once in the hospital. That's all they would allow her.
In those days, Angel, you couldn't go into the hospitals.
No, right. And it was on his birthday. And she said to me today, I asked her what she remembered about the visit. And she said, you know, Mom, all I could think about, and she's right, because the hospital was done, you know, it had an alleyway down where they put all their terminal patients. And those kids were kept separate from the other kids. And she, at 3 years old, couldn't understand why they were like that, why it was like that and everything. And she told me today that's when her life, you know, she is just, she's amazing. She goes for the underdog and gets them. And she said it all started there, you know.
Awesome.
Yeah. And they did. I never thought that she realized that they were all terminal patients on that one wing. And she said to me today, you know, Mom, I knew right away what was the matter with them. You know, so, and Stephen was there on that wing for 3 months. Wow. You know, so.
Gloria, do you have anything to share for mothers and fathers that are caring for their children with cancer? Any advice you can give them? Because let's face it, what you did was, that is the benchmark. How you mothered Stephen, how you dealt with.
Sometimes it was too much.
Yes.
You know, it was, you tend, when you'll see, when you're a parent, you tend to put your kids up on a shelf and you don't want anything to happen to them. And that's what I did in the beginning, because you never knew when he was going to die. And then I realized I made a mistake. And, you know, he had to be treated just like everybody else. And that's what you have to do. And you'll get the strength to go through it. You know, it was rough in the beginning, you know, with 3 years. We were in the doctors more than we were home sometimes, you know, sometimes we had to go to the doctors 3 and 4 times a week because he wasn't good.
And you know, Gloria, I don't think I ever realized this until right this minute. And believe me, we know each other for decades. Mm-hmm. And we've went through a lot together with Stevie and his ups and his downs and all that.
Dr. Iannelli, I always ran to, even though Stephen wasn't his patient, he gave, you know, he said that he always gives his patients his telephone number, you know, his cell number. And that was the first thing he did to me when he met me. He gave me his telephone number.
But what I was going to say was that we were talking about any advice that you have to give to parents. What I just realized actually was Stephen, who Angel, just from hearing this podcast, you're the first one to hear it. And your brother, Eric, also, who's with you on the recording side, would have to agree how remarkable a man Stephen was, how inspiring a man Stephen was, and what could possibly, what kind of stuff can a person like that be made of to be able to just get kicked and kicked and kicked like Tigger and thrown down to the ground and kicked and keep on getting up? And just listening and interviewing Gloria, I kind of have the answer. He took after his mother. He got the stuff that was in him, was directly from you, Gloria. It's your strength that you handed down to both of your children. And I don't know why I didn't see this sooner, you know, because like I said, I was always kind of kidding around with you.
Right.
But it's, you know, parents, really, all of us non-patients can be inspired by Stevie. But the parents who are caring for children with cancer, really, you are their inspiration. They need to find that stuff that's in you, that parental stuff. That stuffing, that spirit, that strength.
And if you have more than one child, you have to, my daughter tells me all the time, well, you didn't know what was going on in my life because you were so busy. And she said she used to walk on eggshells because you never knew when, you know, Stephen was going to get sick and wind up in the hospital. And, you know, we used to send him away for, it sounds awful, but we used to send him away for 2 weeks every summer to a camp in Rochester so that we could spend the time with her.
Let's give actually that camp a little shout out, because that camp is what he lived 50 weeks a year mm-hmm. to get his 2 weeks at that camp. And right. He was the mayor of that camp.
No, he was the sheriff.
He was the sheriff.
Yeah. He kept
it. What is the name of the camp?
Camp Good Days and Special Times in Rochester, out of Rochester. You know, and it was I don't even know how we got involved with it, but it was through some attorney in Albany sent out, I don't know what it was, but we found it. And then he worked there when he got older for 6 weeks. So.
And yeah. Also, Angel, I don't know if I said this, but he was also the honorary fireman captain of the the fireman chief of Wurtsboro Volunteer Fire Department. What do you think about that?
I, you know, it seems like he was ahead of its time. You know, I was actually going to ask you this question. I was going to save it for the end, but since you brought it up, before he had gotten sick, did he ever say what he wanted to do? You know, when he wanted to grow up, did he?
No.
Well, we knew who he wanted to marry. He was in love with one of the camp counselors.
Yeah.
And he was convinced he was going to marry her. Right. So that's
right. Right. Yeah.
And I went right along with it. I said, man, you listen, if you could dream, if you could dream it, you can have it.
You know, he never told me he was sick. He would get mad at me if I told him to slow down and all. And towards the end, the only thing he talked about was his funeral and what he wanted me to do. And that was like the very end.
Wow.
And he also apologized to you, didn't he?
Yes, he did. For being the last week he was alive, he was in the hospital all week because he had sepsis. And he apologized for being so high maintenance, you know, all his life. And he was, but
chokes me up.
I told him I wouldn't change 1 minute of my life with him, you know.
Wow. You know, I think Lori remembers this. I'm going to end this podcast with a poem that I took from Shel Silverstein, who's a wonderful, child poet. And I kind of changed it around for Stevie. And the name of the poem is Sick. And it really, I think, encapsulates Stephen's life. I cannot go to school today, I heard young Stevie Taylor say. I have the measles and the mumps, a gash and a rash and purple bumps. My mouth is wet. My throat is dry. I'm going blind in my right eye. My tonsils are as big as rocks. I've counted 16 chicken pox. And there's one more. That's 17. And don't you think my face looks green? My leg is cut. My eyes are blue. It might be instamatic flu. I cough and sneeze and gasp and choke. I'm sure that my left leg is broke. My hip hurts when I move my chin. My belly button's caving in. My back is wrenched. My ankle sprained. My appendix pains each time it rains. My nose is cold. My toes are numb. I have a sliver in my thumb. My neck is stiff. My voice is weak. I hardly whisper when I speak. My tongue is filling up my mouth. I think my hair is falling out. My elbow's bent. My spine ain't straight. My temperature is 108. My brain is shrunk. I cannot hear. There's a hole inside my ear. I have a hangnail. And my heart is what? What's that? What's that you say? You say today is Saturday? Goodbye. I'm going out to play. It's okay, my little friend. It's okay. Go out and play. Now every day is Saturday. Time for you to run and jump. Time for you to skip and hop. With Christopher Robin and Winnie the Pooh, don't forget, bring Tigger too. It's time to go. You've done enough. Hurry and don't make a huff. We will watch her. We'll give Mom a hand. You watch us from Neverland. The bus to heaven leaves at 11. Angel, don't be late to heaven's gate. Goodbye, my friend. We'll miss you so. But forever in our hearts, you'll grow. Croc Nation, today we honor the life of Stephen Taylor. Today we honor the mother, Gloria Taylor. Today is a day that we honor a hero. Angel, anything from your end?
I think it's only fitting that we had just celebrated Mother's Day. I would like to wish all of the Croc Nation mothers happy Mother's Day, but specifically to Gloria for having the strength, because it's not easy. People think that you just turn on a microphone and you talk. No, it's not easy to relive some moments. But because we're able to celebrate and honor the life of Stevie, it's only going to help each and every one of us love one another just a little bit more. So
and
for
you
that,
know, Angel, I had a great support system. I mean, really great.
Yeah.
And that helps a lot. You need that.
Without a doubt. And so for that, I personally want to thank you.
Croc Nation, if this podcast touched you, if Stevie and Gloria touched you, please reach out to us. Please go to the website. Please leave us a message. Tell Gloria what you think. Tell Gloria thank you for what she's done. Tell Stevie that you wish you knew him. On behalf of Angel Santana, Have Faith, Let It Begin, Rod Freeman, Small Biz Up, Michael John Benzea, Charlotte Larson, our patrons, we say to you in ending, as we say to you every week on behalf, we wish you all a long, healthy, happy, cancer-free life. We look forward to next Wednesday. We will begin a module on appreciating our nurses on these last couple of weeks of May, our oncology nurses. God bless. Peace. Stevie, God bless you. Watch your mother. Keep an eye on her. Thanks, Croc Nation. Be well.